a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Hartman.
Hi, we're going to have a few minutes of dead air here. We've got an engineering problem.
Just heard the Director of Homeland Security's explanation of what has happened this last week. What is your reaction?
We have been abandoned by our own country. Hurricane Katrina will go down in history as one of the worst storms ever to hit an American coast, but the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina will go down as one of the worst abandonments of Americans on American soil ever in U.S. history. I am personally asking our bipartisan congressional delegation here in Louisiana to immediately begin congressional hearings to find out just what happened here. Why did it happen? Who needs to be fired? And believe me, they need to be fired right away, because we still have weeks to go in this tragedy. We have months to go. We have years to go. And whoever's at the top of this totem pole, that totem pole needs to be chainsawed off, and we've got to start with some new leadership. It's not just Katrina that caused all these deaths in New Orleans here. Bureaucracy has committed murder here in the greater New Orleans area, and bureaucracy has to stand trial before Congress now. It's so obvious. FEMA needs more congressional funding. It needs more presidential support. It needs to be a cabinet-level director. It needs to be an independent agency that will be able to fulfill its mission to work in partnership with state and local governments around America. FEMA needs to be empowered to do the things that was created to do. It needs to come somewhere like New Orleans with all of its force immediately, without red tape, without bureaucracy, act immediately with common sense and leadership, and save lives. Forget about the property. We can rebuild the property. It's got to be able to come in and save lives. We need strong leadership at the top of America right now in order to accomplish this, and to reconstructing FEMA.
Mr. Prasad, hold on, sir. Of New Orleans and the governor of New Orleans bear some responsibility. Couldn't they have been much more forceful, much more effective, and much more organized in evacuating the area?
Sir, they were told, like me, every single day, the cavalry's coming. On a federal level, the cavalry's coming. The cavalry's coming. The cavalry's coming. I have just begun to hear the hoofs of the cavalry. The cavalry's still not here yet, but I've begun to hear the hoofs, and we're almost a week out. Let me give you just three quick examples. We had Walmart deliver three trucks of water, trailer trucks of water. FEMA turned them back. They said we didn't need them. This was a week ago. FEMA, we had 1,000 gallons of diesel fuel on a Coast Guard vessel docked in my parish. The Coast Guard said, come get the fuel right away. When we got there with our trucks, they got a word. FEMA says, don't give you the fuel. Yesterday, FEMA comes in and cuts all of our emergency communication lines. They cut them without notice. Our sheriff, Harry Lee, goes back in, he reconnects the line, he posts armed guards on our line and says no one's getting near these lines. Sheriff Harry Lee said that if America would have, American government would have responded like Walmart has responded, we wouldn't be in this crisis. But I want to thank Governor Blanco for all she's done and all her leadership. She sent in the National Guard. I just repaired a breach on my side of the 17th Street Canal that the secretary didn't foresee, a 300-foot breach. I just completed it yesterday with convoys of National Guard and local parish workers and levee board people. It took us 2.5 days working 24/7. I just closed it. I'm telling you, most importantly, I want to thank my public employees that have worked 24/7, that burn out, the doctors, the nurses. And I want to give you one last story, and I'll shut up and let you tell me whatever you want to tell me. The guy who runs this building I'm in, emergency management, he's responsible for everything. His mother was trapped in St. Bernard Nursing Home, and every day she called him and said, "Are you coming, son? Is somebody coming?" And she said, "Yeah, Mama, somebody's coming to get you. Somebody's coming to get you on Tuesday. Somebody's coming to get you on Wednesday. Somebody's coming to get you on Thursday. Somebody's coming to get you on Friday." And she drowned Friday night. She drowned Friday night.
Mr. President.
Nobody's coming to get us. Nobody's coming to get us. The secretary has promised. Everybody's promised. They've had press conferences. I'm sick of the press conferences. For God's sakes, shut up and send us somebody.
Just take a pause, Mr. President. While you gather yourself in your very emotional times, I understand. Let me go to Governor Haley Barbour of Mississippi. Governor Barbour, can you blame Parish President Broussard? Let me start with you. You just heard the Director of Homeland Security's explanation of what has happened this last week. What is your reaction?
We have been abandoned by our own country. Hurricane Katrina will go down in history as one of the worst storms ever to hit an American coast. But the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina will go down as one of the worst abandonments of Americans on American soil ever in U.S. history. I am personally asking our bipartisan congressional delegation here in Louisiana to immediately begin congressional hearings.
And welcome to our program. Tom Hartman here with you live on Labor Day. Sorry about the confusion there. We had a bit of an engineering problem with our satellite provider. But we are here. We are here and we are live. And welcome back to the program on Labor Day. This, what is today's date? The 5th of September. There you go. September 5th, Monday, 2005. And our live program, our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. And if you'd like to drop into our live chat room, TomHartman.com. I want to talk about the hurricane and its consequences. We're going to get into some Labor Day stuff here today, that being the day. Some of the conspiracy theories that are floating around. We're still looking for Dick Cheney. Nobody has seen Dick Cheney. Apparently, he's still on vacation in Wyoming. Some would suggest, the guy knows when it's not a good time to stick your head up. He's going to let somebody else take the fall for this. Dick Cheney, a seasoned political operative. No dummy him. All right. But here's just an interesting setup, I suppose, for the conspirists out there. And heaven only knows, where this is going to go, we'll see. But this from the St. Petersburg Times, August 17, 2004. Okay, this is about Hurricane Charley. This was a year ago. As Hurricane Charley was the roundup piece that was run in the St. Petersburg Time right after Hurricane Charley in Florida. And I quote, "Governor Jeb Bush sought federal help Friday while Hurricane Charley was still in the Gulf of Mexico. President Bush approved the aid about an hour after the hurricane made landfall." Maybe you can only get FEMA to react if your brother is the governor, is the president, and you're a governor. Now, I know there's a lot of folks out there saying, no, what's really going on here is this is payback. You've got a Democratic governor, you've got a Democratic senator, you've got a Democratic mayor, and Bush and the Bush administration right now, at the same time that they're saying, don't play politics with us, which is code for don't criticize Republicans. At the same time they're saying that, they've got all their lapdogs and surrogates out there saying this is all the fault of the Democratic mayor, the Democratic governor, and they're even going to try and blame it on the Democratic senator. It's all those Democrats. Why is that bureaucracy down there? Again, back to the St. Petersburg Times from a year ago, Hurricane Charley. By Monday afternoon, the cavalry seemed to be in place. Cargo planes were shuttling FEMA supplies from a Georgia Air Force base to a staging area in Lakeland, and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers had shipped 11 truckloads of water and 14 truckloads of ice. The first assistance checks to victims were to be shipped Monday night. This was the day after the hurricane. They're mailing out checks before they've even started the cleanup. This again from the St. Petersburg Times. FEMA has positioned a powerful list of disaster response personnel, equipment, and supplies to help those who are displaced or suffer losses after Hurricane Frances continues to move across Florida. Let's say another hurricane. The advanced preparations include FEMA's National and Regional Operations Centers operating around the clock, coordinating the pre-positioning of assets and responding to state requests for assistance. FEMA has deployed an advanced emergency response team to the Florida State Emergency Operations Center in Tallahassee to facilitate state requests for assistance. In addition, three Rapids Needs Assessment teams have been pre-deployed to Florida. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, at FEMA's request, is coordinating the staging of 100 truckloads of water and 100 truckloads of ice at operational centers in Florida. A first shipment of 30,000 tarps is en route to Atlanta, Georgia, to be pre-staged for delivery to areas affected by Frances once the storm has cleared. Now, this is all before the storm has even hit. FEMA is working to provide 10 trailers of generators at the request of Florida that will be used to provide power to critical facilities affected by the hurricane. This for Hurricane Frances, which was hitting Florida last year. Four urban search and rescue teams are deployed to Florida, two in Miami and two in Jacksonville. Four teams are on alert. Two disaster medical assistance teams, DMATs, have been deployed to Florida to support medical facilities and hospitals that are not fully operational following the storm. Five pharmaceutical caches containing emergency medical supplies are being pre-positioned and are currently en route to Atlanta and Tampa. This is the press release from FEMA, dated September 4, 2004, on advanced preparations for Hurricane Frances. FEMA's mobile emergency response services, communication staff, and equipment are available to provide telephone, radio, and video links in support of response and recovery efforts. FEMA is working with the General Services Administration to analyze vacancy rates of various safe housing options as part of pre-planning temporary housing strategies for those whose homes are severely damaged or destroyed. As of noon Monday, this is from the FEMA website. As of noon Monday, 2 days after Frances made landfall in Florida, where Jeb Bush was governor, FEMA and other federal response agencies have taken the following actions. About 100 trucks of water, 280 trucks of ice are present or will arrive in the Jacksonville staging area today. 900,000 meals ready to eat are on site in Jacksonville, ready to be distributed. 7,000 cases of food, including vegetables, fruits, cheese, ham, and turkey, are scheduled to arrive in Winter Haven today. Disaster medical assistance teams are on the ground and setting up comfort stations. FEMA personnel, community relations personnel will coordinate with DMATs to assist victims. What happened? Why all this stuff for Florida? Two different hurricanes, nothing for New Orleans. 20 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Forces of the world unite, let us save the day.
Oh, it's the anti-Labor Day song.
Contents without 5 cents want us to cut our pay.
Yes, bosses of the world unite.
We make 500 times as much as our average worker drones. We work just as hard and we too sometimes need to paint our homes.
And welcome back, my friends. 25 minutes past the hour, 24 minutes, 45 seconds past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on this Labor Day. The New York Times reports that Karl Rove has personally taken control, along with Dan Bartlett, the communications director of the White House, of the public relations disaster, a program put into place immediately now to shift responsibility for the failure of FEMA to Democrats. I guarantee you it's going to be, you know, whenever Bush has a problem or whenever he has an opponent, it's somebody else's fault and they get on it as fast as they can. And usually it's a woman's fault. When Bush had to go after John McCain, it was McCain's wife he attacked by having the push polls where they were calling people all over the state of South Carolina saying that John McCain's wife was had been, let's see, she'd had a psychotic breakdown, that their black and child that was adopted from Bangladesh, that their child was actually the product of John McCain having had an affair with an African-American woman. And, you know, and these were push polls, right? They would call up and say, how would it change your vote on John McCain if you were to learn? And they never said that it was true. They just simply, you know, and this is how Bush won the primary in South Carolina in 2000 against John McCain, slashing his wife. Joe Wilson comes out and says that. What do? They go after his wife. Now we've got the governor of Louisiana. She's a woman. Bush will go after her, I guarantee you. You will soon be hearing in the press. And in fact, on Sunday we heard Tim Russert asking Aaron Broussard, the president of Jefferson Parish, which is like the equivalent of a county commissioner in most of the rest of the United States. Well, don't you think that the governor should be held accountable? I'm going to share that clip with you after the next break, but it's just absolutely mind-boggling. You will see. We're all going to see this. As horrible as it is, Bush blaming others. Rich in Pittsburgh. Hey, Rich, what's up?
Hey, good morning. How you guys doing out there?
Good.
Just a statement and a couple questions. This article by Matt Stearns and Seth Borenstein, Knight Ritter, appeared yesterday in the Post-Gazette. Really great article. It's about 22 column inches, so I won't go into the whole thing. But the basic ideas behind it, who is this guy? Like you said, he's a horse guy.
Oh, the guy who's in charge of FEMA, yeah.
Yeah,
well,
right.
He was the college roommate of the previous head of FEMA, who was the campaign manager for George W. Bush's campaign in 2000.
Right, yeah. I think Arabian Horse Association,
yeah.
Michael D. Brown.
Yeah.
There's a question here, too, also, just a statement, too, about everybody talks about capitalism, but I'll tell you what, capitalism is just a subconstruct of the system what we have here. Our system is capitalism, and everybody tells you don't mix capitalism with democracy, but that you cannot do that in this country.
Well,
they're all intertwined.
Capitalism is an economic system. Democracy is a political system. And
yeah.
The cons would want you to think that capitalism is a political system, and it's not. It's an economic system. Capitalism, in sum, means that you can take your own money and invest it and make a living off that money rather than making a living off your work. That's, you're investing capital. That's capitalism. Free enterprise means that you can open your own business. We have a system that is both capitalistic and free enterprise.
Used to be.
Well, you've got now monopolistic
and plutocratic. I'm talking about the construct.
And you're absolutely right, Rich. And now what we've got increasingly is a system that is pure kleptocracy. It's just, and that's the Bushies. That's the cons. But, you know, back to what's going on in New Orleans. I'm telling you, this New York Times. Under the command of President Bush's two senior political advisors, the White House rolled out a plan this weekend to contain the political damage from the administration's response to Hurricane Katrina. The effort is directed by Mr. Bush's chief political advisor, Karl Rove.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I was burned out from exhaustion, buried in the hail, poisoned in the bushes and blown out on the trail. Hunted like a crocodile, ravaged in the corn. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
Unfortunately, no shelter from the storm coming from the Bush administration for people who live in the Democratic state of Louisiana. With a Democratic governor, a Democratic mayor, a Democratic senator, could that have anything to do with it? Or is it just that if you're a Bush buddy, like, or if you're a Bush brother, then FEMA actually prepositions. Prepositions. August 17, 2004, Hurricane Charley. Before Hurricane... By Monday afternoon, the cavalry seemed to be in place. Cargo planes were shuttling FEMA supplies from a Georgia Air Force base to a staging area in Lakeland. And the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers had shipped 11 truckloads of water and 14 truckloads of ice. The first assistance checks to victims were to be shipped Monday night. The hurricane hit Sunday. They're mailing checks on Monday. The guy who's the head of FEMA now, well, what's, you know, he's referred to as a GOP activist, Michael Brown. Congressman Stephen Lynch, fried. Brown, formerly an estates and family lawyer, this week has made several shocking admissions. This is an article by Brett Ahrens. Including interviews where he suggested FEMA was unaware of the misery and desperation of refugees stranded at the convention center. Before joining the Bush administration in 2001, Brown spent 11 years as the commissioner of judges and stewards for the International Arabian Horse Association, a breeder and horse show organization based in Colorado. He was forced out of that position after a spate of lawsuits over alleged supervision failures. Bill Pennington, president of the International Arabian Horse Association, confirmed last night, quote, he was asked to resign. End quote. But George W. Bush says, no, no, he's doing a great job. Brownie, you're doing a great job. Maybe on Sunday you saw on Face the Nation, or Meet the Press, rather, Tim Russert interviewing Jefferson Parish President Aaron Broussard. Pieces of that clip have been played, but some pieces of that clip that I think are really important are not being played in the national media. Here's Tim Russert. He starts out talking to Aaron Broussard, president of Jefferson Parish. Now, in Louisiana, they refer to what most of the United States refers to as a county, as a parish. And they're what in most counties are a county commissioner. In the parish, in the parishes in Louisiana, you have the president of the parish. So he's the president of the Jefferson Parish.
Parish President Broussard, let me start with you. You just heard the director of Homeland Security's explanation of what has happened this last week. What is your reaction?
Now, this is after Michael Chertoff, the head of Homeland Security, comes on and says, let's not point fingers. Let's not point fingers. Yeah.
We have been abandoned by our own country. Hurricane Katrina will go down in history as one of the worst storms ever to hit an American coast. But the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina will go down as one of the worst abandonments of Americans on American soil ever in U.S. history.
Now, Tim Russert, you know, he works for GE. It's a big Republican company. It's a, you know, the big multinationals, they certainly know which side their bread is buttered on, and it's more the Republican side than the Democratic side. He really starts getting very uncomfortable with this kind of talk.
I am personally asking our bipartisan congressional delegation here in Louisiana to immediately begin congressional hearings to find out just what happened here. Why did it happen? Who needs to be fired? And believe me, they need to be fired right away, because we still have weeks to go in this tragedy. We have months to go. We have years to go. And whoever's at the top of this totem pole, that totem pole needs to be chainsawed off, and we've got to start with some new leadership. It's not just Katrina that caused all these deaths in New Orleans here. Bureaucracy has committed murder here in the greater New Orleans area, and bureaucracy has to stand trial before Congress now. It's so obvious. FEMA needs more congressional funding. It needs more presidential support. It needs to be a cabinet-level director. It needs to be an independent agency that will be able to fulfill its mission to work in partnership with state and local governments around America. FEMA needs to be empowered to do the things that was created to do. It needs to come somewhere like New Orleans with all of its force immediately, without red tape, without bureaucracy, act immediately with common sense and leadership.
Now, oddly, that's exactly what happened in Florida. In Florida, Governor Jeb Bush sought federal help Friday while Hurricane Charley was still in the Gulf of Mexico. President Bush approved the aid about an hour after the hurricane made landfall. Yes. Well, but not for Louisiana.
And save lives. Forget about the property. We can rebuild the property. It's got to be able to come in and save lives. We need strong leadership at the top of America right now in order to accomplish this and to reconstructing FEMA.
Mr. Prasad,
is this guy talking about the president? We can't have that.
Of New Orleans and the governor of New Orleans bear some responsibility.
There you
Couldn't they have been much more forceful, much more effective, and much more organized in evacuating the area?
Shouldn't we just blame it on the Democratic governor?
Sir, they were told, like me, every single day, the cavalry's coming. On a federal level, the cavalry's coming. The cavalry's coming. The cavalry's coming. I have just begun to hear the hoofs of the cavalry. The cavalry's still not here yet, but I've begun to hear the hoofs, and we're almost a week out. Let me give you just three quick examples.
Now, this is where it gets very strange. This is where you have to scratch your head and say, the federal government did what? Now, keep in mind, when the last hurricane hit Florida, again from FEMA's press releases, as of noon Monday, we're talking about Hurricane Charley here, hit Florida over the weekend. As of noon Monday, FEMA and other federal response agencies, 100 trucks of water, 280 trucks of ice are present or will arrive in Jacksonville staging area, 900,000 meals ready to eat, 7,000 cases of food, including vegetables, fruit, cheese, ham, and turkeys, disaster medical assistance teams, urban search and rescue teams, FEMA coordinating the Department of Energy and the state to ensure fuel supplies, Army Corps of Engineers soon began its efforts to provide tarps. This was just a year ago. We were still in Iraq. It's not about Iraq, then what's it about? So anyhow, here's where it gets strange. That's what happened in Florida. In Florida, where your brother's the governor, everything, you know, the FEMA is there even before the hurricane strikes. In Louisiana, where you got a Democrat for governor and a Democrat running the city and you got a Democratic senator, maybe not. So anyhow, here now, Jefferson Parish President Aaron Broussard tells a very strange story that got absolutely no press coverage. Tim Russert didn't even react to it.
We had Walmart deliver trailer trucks of water. FEMA turned them back. They said we didn't need them. This was a week ago. FEMA, we had 1,000 gallons of diesel fuel on a Coast Guard vessel docked in my parish. The Coast Guard said, come get the fuel right away. When we got there with our trucks, they got a word. FEMA says, don't give you the fuel.
Now, FEMA says, don't give you the water. Now, this was a week ago. This was on Sunday, so this would have been the day after the hurricane hit. FEMA says, don't give them that water that Walmart donated. Don't give them the fuel that the Coast Guard arranged for?
Yesterday, FEMA comes in and cuts all of our emergency communication lines.
Say what? They cut your emergency lines? Now, this would have been day before yesterday, now Saturday, because this was an interview yesterday, Sunday, with Tim Russert. Today, Monday, Labor Day. Yesterday, so Saturday, FEMA comes in and cuts all of our communications lines? Wait a second. You hear this right?
All of our emergency communication lines.
Let me just back it up just a little bit so you can get the whole thing here.
FEMA says don't give you the fuel. Yesterday, FEMA comes in and cuts all of our emergency communication lines. They cut them without notice. Our sheriff, Harry Lee, goes back in. He reconnects the line. He posts armed guards on our line and says no one's getting near these lines. Sheriff Harry Lee said that if American government would have responded like Walmart has responded, we wouldn't be in this crisis. But I want to thank Governor Blanco for all she's done and all the leadership.
And
she's sent in the National Guard.
Thank the Democratic governor.
I just prepared a breach on my side of the 17th Street Canal that the secretary didn't foresee, a 300-foot breach. I just completed it yesterday with convoys of National Guard and local parish
from
workers
the governor.
And levee board people. It took us 2.5 days working 24/7. I just closed it. I'm telling you, most importantly, I want to thank my public employees that have worked 24/7, that burn out, the doctors, the nurses. And I want to give you one last story, and I'll shut up and let you tell me whatever you want to tell me.
This is the point where it got really intense. And this is the clip that a lot of the media are playing. where Aaron Broussard actually breaks down telling the story of what happened with a coworker in his office.
The guy who runs this building I'm in, emergency management, he's responsible for everything. His mother was trapped in St. Bernard Nursing Home, and every day she called him and said, "Are you coming, son? Is somebody coming?" And she said, "Yeah, Mama, somebody's coming to get you. Somebody's coming to get you on Tuesday. Somebody's coming to get you on Wednesday. Somebody's coming to get you on Thursday. Somebody's coming to get you on Friday." And she drowned Friday night. She drowned Friday night.
Mr. President.
Nobody's coming to get us. Nobody's coming to get us.
No, you're Democrats.
The Secretary has promised. Everybody's promised. They've had press conferences. I'm sick of the press conferences. For God's sakes, shut up and send us somebody.
Just take a pause, Mr. President.
Enough of this stuff. We're starting to make the Bush administration look bad. We can't have that. This is a national television, after all. Yeah. I think I have a feeling Tim Russert, who I think is basically is a good guy and who I respect. I think he got a lot more than he expected there. So, we have hurricanes hitting Florida, and FEMA prepositions days before the hurricane even strikes. The event here, this is from the FEMA website. FEMA has positioned a powerful list of disaster response personnel, equipment, and supplies to help those who are displaced or suffer losses after Hurricane Frances continues to move across Florida. The advance preparations include, this is for a Florida hurricane. FEMA's National and Regional Operations Centers are operating around the clock, coordinating and prepositioning assets. FEMA's deployed an advanced emergency response team to the Florida State Emergency Operations Center in Tallahassee. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, at FEMA's request, is coordinating the staging of 100 truckloads of water and 100 truckloads of ice. A first shipment of 30,000 tarps is en route to Atlanta to be pre-staged. This is before the hurricane has hit. FEMA is providing 10 trailers of generators at the request of Florida that will be used to provide power to critical facilities. 4 urban search and rescue teams are deployed to Florida, 2 in Miami and 2 in Jacksonville. 2 disaster... and it just goes... I mean, that's the first half of the first page. It's 3 pages long. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. Is it Gary in Indianapolis or is that Sean?
It's Gary.
Gary. Hey, Gary, what's up?
I initially called to say I heard that Meet the Press with Tim Russert. I thought of all of them, it was probably the most powerful one of all of them. But what a contrast there was between him and Britt on the Fox one. I was so disgusted when I heard that. I will not go into any place that has Fox on again. I mean, I'm a truck driver, and if I see Fox on at a place, I walk out. I will not go into a place.
Well, this Fox News is pretty openly the media arm of the Republican Party. I mean, you just have to understand that.
I think the thing that needs to happen right now, and maybe you could talk to some of your journalist friends or whatever. I wish I had the ability as a truck driver out here to do it, but somebody needs to coordinate a timeline of all the information from the weather sources, from the individual radio and television stations, from the media, from the press, from the government, and coordinate the statements in a chronological order and show the absolute lies that have come out of this administration and the spinning of the crap that we've heard. I'll tell you, it is atrocious that they get by with it. And I just heard this morning, here he's coming down. He's down there in Louisiana now, and he goes down there without even calling and notifying the governor that he's coming down there this morning.
Yeah,
the governor has to set that up on herself, own the media.
Right, and then they have to shut down everything while he's there. Like when Laura Bush showed up, these people had to wait 2 hours to eat because they couldn't be fed until Laura Bush showed up so that she could be in the picture when they were being fed. I mean, this is incredible. But you know, the guy who started Fox News is Roger Ailes, and Roger Ailes was to Ronald Reagan what Karl Rove is to George W. Bush.
He's
the president of Fox News. So, I mean, surprise.
In the process of the time that his plane is coming in and everything else, they were saying that other aircraft wasn't able to get in and out, and they had to delay them so he could get in there and see his picture up.
Yeah, and
I tell you what, there's got to be something changed, and it's going to require every citizen out there to contact their senators and their representatives daily.
Yeah, well, it's going to take more than that and less than that in a way, Gary. What it's going to take is for all of us to start getting politically active, get out there, get involved, and get ready for the 2006 elections. And by the way, let's make sure that the voting machines are not rigged this time. This, an official news release, August 29, 2005, document number HQ-05-174 from FEMA. The first sentence, Michael D. Brown, Undersecretary of Homeland Security for Emergency Preparedness and Response and head of the FEMA today urged all fire and emergency service departments not to respond to counties and states affected by Hurricane Katrina without being requested and lawfully dispatched by state and local authorities under mutual and aid agreements in the Emergency Management Assistance Compact. It's a stand-down order, August 29, from FEMA. You can see it on their website. Along with a link to Pat Robertson's Operation Blessing, where you can give him money. You can see that on their website, too, 10 minutes before the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you 5 minutes before the hour. People say this is all about race. I'm increasingly wondering if it's all about politics. Taking out Governor Blanco, a Democratic governor, taking out a Democratic mayor. Or is it just that, is it all about cronyism? Is it that if your brother runs the state, then FEMA prepositions supplies before a hurricane? But if it's not your brother, then tough luck. Actually, you know, the more I think about it, that's probably the more likely scenario, that it's really all about cronyism, because that's something the Bush administration understands real well. They take care of their own, and everybody else, hey, you're on your own, just like the rest of America. They're running around yelling about the death tax, right, the estate tax that'll affect about 3,000 people who are multimillionaires and billionaires. But what about the real death tax? The fact that if you are middle income, if you're average American and you're old and you get sick, you have to wipe out your savings. You have to literally wipe out your savings and become impoverished before Medicaid will help pay for your nursing home or for your health care. That's the real death. But you know, hey, tough luck, buddies. You're not part of our group. Kenny in Baltimore on the line. Hey, Kenny, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Had to get myself together, man. It was so heart-wrenching. I'm just asking you. Don't let this go, huh?
Oh, I don't intend to. Kenny, what's your take on it?
I can't even talk right now.
That's okay. Kenny, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. This is a terrible, terrible thing, and I appreciate your calling in and sharing your anguish with us. It's a tough one for all of us. Jay in Atlanta. Hey, Jay, what's up?
Hey, of course I could have asked this question before the hurricane, but to make a point, what's the difference between you and someone who doesn't care and someone who just will tolerate? And more to the point, after listening to you talk about that guy from Russia was saying how they cut the communication. They told them not to.
Jay, I'm sorry. I just had to dump your obscenity off the air. TJ in Nashville, we got about 15 seconds. TJ, what's up?
Hi. I'm originally from Baton Rouge, and there's a huge vacant military base in Alexandria, about 2.5-3 hours from New Orleans.
Yeah.
Why did they bus these people 7, 8, 10 hours to Texas when they could have took them there?
Well, there's a theory about that, and it's that if they go to Texas and they vote in 2006, they won't affect the Texas elections. It'll stay a red state. But if they move them to one of the purple states like Missouri or Tennessee or keep in Louisiana, then, you know, you got another Democratic state. Without New Orleans, without the Democratic voters in New Orleans, Louisiana becomes a red state. But, again, I'm not saying that that's what it's all about. I'm just saying that's the theory going around. I find it fascinating, the conspiracy theories that are spinning up around this. And I'm beginning to scratch my head and wonder if they could be. Could it be? Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. It's wrapping up the hour. The Tom Hartman Program, the place where smart people get their news.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast, on Sirius Satellite Radio, on RadioPower.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org, podcasting on Apple's iTunes, and broadcasting on digital systems across the country on CRN Digital. Welcome back. We have Jeffrey Feldman, Dr. Jeffrey Feldman, with us. He's the editor of FrameShopIsOpen.com. Hey, Jeffrey.
Hey, Tom.
Jeffrey, before we get into our conversation, which is about, there's a whole lot of different areas we can go with this thing, but the whole Bush idea of sacrifice. First, I'd like to take a couple callers here, but I wanted to bring you on first. You may have some things to toss into these, so feel free to jump in. But let's just clear the phone lines out and give a few of our callers an opportunity to get out what's on their mind. Bill in New Mexico, you're live and on the air. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Good morning. I thought the first caller you had on today nailed it right on the head that this needs to be put in line and all the events that have happened to come up with this. I mean, this guy, I was in L.A. on Monday afternoon watching the news, and he was in Ontario, California, and they're making speeches, you know. I'm
right.
Going, you know, there's a major hurricane out here, and this guy's out here making speeches.
And playing the guitar.
Then Tuesday, he's not even there yet. What was that Tuesday afternoon?
But Cheney's still in Wyoming on vacation.
Yeah.
Dick Cheney is still in Wyoming on vacation.
Where is our government? Nobody holds them accountable for anything, Bill.
These guys can't govern because they don't believe in government. They are the followers of Reagan's dictum that the nine most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government, I'm here to help. Remember, Ronald Reagan used to tell that joke at least once every other month, and he thought it was the funniest thing. And these guys just don't believe in government. Bill, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it.
Hey, one more thing.
Yeah, sure.
I turned on the news this morning, and he's not talking about this. He's so worried about getting this guy into the judge, you know, Supreme Court nominee. There wasn't even no mention of it. That's all he's talking about. Oh, we need to get him in there.
Well, I'm sure Karl Rove is sitting back there saying, hey, this is something that can change the news cycle. This will get the TV and radio stations to stop talking about your incompetent response to Hurricane Katrina, and start talking about John Roberts. That's a political controversy we can handle. And that'll bring the conservatives out to defend you. Now that in the New York Times, they say Karl Rove is now supervising chief of the White House communications director, Dan Bartlett, are now supervising all of the interactions with the media. So, I mean, that's what's up. Bill, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. Alice in Humboldt County, California. Hey, Alice, what's up?
Good morning, Tom.
Listening on KGOE. Hey, Alice.
I don't put much of anything to be beyond the Bush team. They refused all offers of help and caused delays for help. Once again, they have caused a number of deaths. Their character cannot be explained.
Allison, you're 91 years. Have you ever seen anything like this?
No, I never have. I hope I never see it again.
Yeah.
But they say there could be more storms coming in.
I know.
And so they should be prepared.
They should be.
I noticed that Bush puts his arm around women and then kisses them on the cheek. That's supposed to take care of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't in my book.
There you go. Well said, Alice. Thank you very much
okay.
for the call. Always good to hear from you. John in New Jersey. Hey, John, what's up?
Yeah, I don't think it's about Democrat, Republican, rich, poor, black, and white. It's only about one thing. They will do anything to stay in power. And in Florida, they saw the elections right around the corner, and they said, you know, we got to make a show. Now, they have no elections right around the corner, so they don't need to make a show. They really don't care about them people if they don't have an election right around
the corner. Well, in fact, actually, there is an election right around the corner, but the people in Louisiana who will be running for re-election are all Democrats. And I guarantee you that the governor of Louisiana, who is a Democrat, that her career is toast now.
Yeah, well, I they think on the national scale, and yeah, we got another over a little over a year, we got congressional elections, but to them, there's nothing real close that they care about.
Yeah.
And so they didn't want to impress everybody by what they were going to do to get their votes. If this had been 3 months before a presidential election, I guarantee you, them trucks would have been lining up 100 miles outside of Louisiana waiting to get in, you know, before the hurricane. But
yeah. Well,
they see its power. That's all they want, power. Yeah,
there you go. John, thank you. As we saw with Hurricane Charley, again, the St. Petersburg Times, August 17, 2004. What's this? 3 months before a presidential election. Governor Jeb Bush sought federal help Friday while Hurricane Charley was still in the Gulf of Mexico. President Bush approved the aid about an hour after the hurricane made landfall. By Monday afternoon, the cavalry was in place. Cargo planes were shuttling FEMA supplies from a Georgia Air Force base to a staging area in Lakeland, and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers had shipped 11 truckloads of water and 14 truckloads of ice. The first assistance checks to victims were to be shipped Monday night. The checks! Will in Pittsburgh, listening on WPTT. Hey, Will.
Mr. Hartman, and I'm glad you have a job on this Labor Day and that you have not been outsourced. I thank the world of you.
Thank you. Actually, we're broadcasting live from Bombay. No, just kidding. Sorry.
I mean, you're probably masquerading as a communist Chinese.
There you go. So, Will, I got to move through this stuff fast. What's up?
Hey, I caught you again when you have a guest. By the way, have you been elevated to DEFCON 5, a commie, by the Republican Fox Network yet?
Not yet, but give him another week.
By the way, the greatest dictator that I've ever lived under, and I thought I saw one because I lived under Stalin until the age of 10, is Ronnie. He destroyed the middle class.
Ronnie Reagan.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, he started this whole thing. You're absolutely right, Will. You're absolutely right. And that's where it all began. Billy in Santa Cruz. Hey, Billy, listening on KRXA. Hey, Billy, what's up?
Just two things. You know, the Republicans came to do exactly this, starve the baby, make sure there were no money for social.
They call
programs.
It starve the beast, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, Grover Norquist said with Mara Liasson on 2001 on National Public Radio, he said, we don't want to destroy government. We just want to shrink it down to the size where we can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub. Well, they just drowned it in New Orleans.
They've done it. And, boy, living in California, can you imagine if there was an earthquake at this time when he so depleted our resources? But just a word about the media before we go that's very important.
Sir.
Did you see the NBC show, the sort of telethon with the music and the chat about the thing?
I did not.
Okay, so at one point, they have this young man, Kanye West.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Who was speaking from his heart. And he did something that you just did. And that is, he cut someone off who was just speaking from their heart. That person who used the bull word.
Right.
I'm not offended by that.
Yeah,
no one is. It's honest emotion.
Yeah.
The media has to be willing to hear some hard things, not to protect the government and the people from hearing our frustration. Don't you think you should stand up to that?
Yeah, I agree, Billy. And the amazing thing about this, Billy, was that Fox News the next day played that little clip of that guy of, what's his name, they're going off on George W. Bush. And then one of their commentators said, you know, you would think that you'd have a producer there with his finger on the delete button, as if criticizing the president is the same thing as obscenity. And in fact, they did delete it when it played on the West Coast. So, Logan in New York City. Hey, Logan, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Yeah, I think this catastrophe, if it isn't the greatest signal that the con way of doing things is not right, shrinking government so you can drown it, it's not going to work. But also, it just seems like these guys, they know they can't get elected, so that they always have to use fraud, and they've been doing it since Nixon, and their policies don't work. I mean, isn't this just obvious to people now?
I think increasingly it is, Logan, and I appreciate the call and your comment. Jeffrey Feldman. Frameshopisopen.com, incredible website you got there, Jeffrey. And you've heard all these calls. This is, I mean, I think that this is really representative of where America's at. It's not just this show. What's your take on all this?
Well, I think it's incredible when you listen to people vent their emotions, because what you hear is this contrast between an American public, which is still very much almost exhausted with anxiety and with tears. And you listen to the people in the administration, and it's as if they're running a boardroom. You know, it took them 1 week to figure out how to get the president to look like he was actually responding to the emotions of the situation. This is above and beyond the pragmatic failures that took place, not getting things to people on the ground. We had a president who looked like he was completely detached from what was going on out there. I think that above and beyond watching the pictures of the convention center and the Superdome, where people just sitting there dehydrating, expiring from the heat and from the lack of attention, people are completely frustrated with how removed from this very tangible American reality their president is.
Yeah, and George W. Bush calling for sacrifice. The thing that I found fascinating, Jeffrey Feldman, of frameshopisopen.com, is that George W. Bush went on TV yesterday, did his radio address live on TV, and his pitch was give cash to the Red Cross. And it's absolutely consistent with his idea that only private agencies should really be helping, that the role of the government is not to help, it's only to punish.
Exactly. I mean, that struck me as well. I mean, the extent to which the only appeal that the president put out was a call for money was just remarkable. Here you had people who were in anguish about how they could reach out and help, people scampering to get into New Orleans, to get into the other cities and states in order to help. And all the president could do was what I thought was a very thin and cheap appeal for money. And then when you looked at the list, I don't know if you've been following the controversy around that, but the list that FEMA put out included the Pat Roberts organization, Robertson's organization, for example.
Yeah, it used to be number three. I'm looking at the page right now. Last Friday when I was on the air and raving about this, there were only three organizations that were listed. And Pat Robertson's was the third, along with a food bank and the Red Cross. Now I'm looking at it, and I'm not even seeing Pat Robertson's organization on there.
Unbelievable.
Maybe it is. Maybe I'm just missing it. No, it looks like they've taken him off.
Yeah, I mean, what seems to really inspire Americans historically is the call for participation above and beyond just taking out your checkbook. This historically has been how Americans have drawn together. The president seems completely detached from that. On the question of Iraq, he has not put out a call for Americans to participate in any way. He simply demanded that soldiers go overseas and sacrifice their lives, and he has given bits and pieces of stories that change and are not true. And what is incredibly tragic about what's going on in the Gulf is that the same pattern keeps on getting repeated. The president is not involving the American public in any way, but this time there's a radical difference. We had reporters on the ground showing exactly what people were going through. We've got people who refuse to hold back their emotions, and now the president seems one step behind.
Yeah, and his call for sacrifice, it seems, is always, for example, the sacrifice, as you mentioned in your piece, the Abrahamic, if I'm pronouncing that right, sacrifice of his son Isaac, the sacrifice of the soldiers. Well, dead soldiers, that's our sacrifice. Taxes? No, we're not going to sacrifice that.
Exactly. I mean, the contrast that I make in that piece is between the sacrifice that Roosevelt called for going into World War II. He called for total shared responsibility in the country, whereas the president, when he stands up and calls for sacrifice, it's almost always about a very thinly veiled call for money, or in the case of Iraq, sacrificing our children.
Well, not our our children, not his children.
Exactly.
Yeah, and not a single of the 11 draft age children of any of the extended Bush family have chosen to enlist in this noble cause. Dr. Jeffrey Feldman, frameshopisopen.com. You got to check it out. You'll learn so much about framing. Jeffrey Feldman, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
I do appreciate it. 20 minutes past the hour, the Tom Hartman radio program.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
He's a cowboy president, but he wears a black hat. In America, can't get away with that.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Our program brought to you today by Motor Silk. 1-866-LESS-FUEL. 1-866-LESS-FUEL. Fuel for Motor Silk. This report is not verified, but I found it very interesting. A couple of days ago, perhaps you noticed, there was just this little story. It appeared, I saw it once, right? Actually, I heard it once. I think it was on NPR I heard it. But it just kind of flew by and then it was gone. And that was that 600 or so soldiers fighting in Iraq were being brought back from Iraq National Guard and regular army, because they were from Louisiana. And they were being brought back to Louisiana to help out there. And then you get this piece that seems to have come through Al Jazeera. I'm not actually sure of the origin of it, but here's the news story. This is out of the Middle East. Reports are emanating from Iraqis who are working with the Americans, both at the Baghdad International Airport and in the Green Zone, of a mutiny that occurred among the American soldiers against their officers. 3 days ago, one American soldier went into hysterics upon hearing of the death of the three members of his family in New Orleans. Corporal Nick Lancer shouted, "This is the curse of Iraq. My family paid for my crimes in Iraq. Send us back to help our families. Damn you, Bush and Rumsfeld," end quote. And then, you know, so this story, I saw this story, what was it, Thursday or Friday, came across. I was waiting for some verification on it. In fact, David Poole had been looking for some verification. We haven't been able to independently verify it. But what did happen over the weekend was that Bush said he's going to pull some of the Louisiana folks back to Louisiana out of Iraq. Interesting. I don't know if there's a connection between the two or not. There's also a lot of talk now about the, again, this was this morning on NPR, there was this just brief segment. They were interviewing this guy, and they said, you know, what is your take on Louisiana? And he said, well, my biggest concern is that what we're going to see is the gentrification of New Orleans. In other words, all the poor neighborhoods are wiped out, and they're going to be rebuilt like Disneyland. And you're going to have a New Orleans that's like a Disneyland New Orleans. And there, again, there's, you know, to the extent that this sounds like paranoia, I don't know. You know, I don't know. But there are folks out there who are suggesting that, you know, this is a marvelous opportunity for the gentrification. This is urban renewal done by Mother Nature. That, you know, it'll just get rid of all those nasty poor black people and replace them with nice middle class homes. And the banks will be able to buy up these places for pennies on the dollar, in many cases get them even for free. Only about a third of the city had flood insurance. Only about a third of the city could afford it. And so, you know, is New Orleans going to be built as an entirely different? Almost certainly. Is it going to be done in a way that makes a lot of money for the Republicans and for the cons and for their friends? Yeah, probably. Scott in San Diego on the line. Hey, Scott, what's on your mind today?
Well, good morning, Tom. Thank you for being on the air today.
My pleasure.
I remember a quote from Calvin and Hobbes. His mom had said to clean up his room.
Yeah.
Tells him how to do a good job. It's really important to do a good job. Do the best you can. Believe in yourself. And he goes in his room and he says to Hobbes, "I don't need to do a better job. I need better PR on the job I do." When I read that New York Times article this morning, I thought, my God, George Bush does read. He reads the comic page. He's
That's
got a
right.
whole action plan.
That's right. His whole action plan is to bring in Dan Bartlett and Karl Rove.
Now, this is what gets me, Tom, about this. I studied marketing, corporate marketing. I worked as a marketing communications manager for a computer manufacturer. Now, there's dancing on buttered ice while juggling. That's tricky. But one thing my marketing professor pointed out was that, well, a lot of things, but the Tylenol case in the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah, I remember it well.
That is exactly what not to do. The cover-ups.
Yeah, that's actually been studied. That is one of the cases that they do study in business schools these days.
I studied that case, and Bush is doing exactly that right now. He is doing the Tylenol thing, playbook by playbook.
Well, except that Tylenol, you know, I think that there's a real significant difference here, and that is that Tylenol didn't have the ability to shift the blame to somebody else. And Bush is going to do that. Mark my words. Within 2 days, the main meme in the media is going to be that the governor of Louisiana and the mayor of New Orleans failed. And George Bush.
Chertoff has already been saying that yesterday.
That's right. And George Bush came in and cleaned up after they failed. That's going to be the main meme, I guarantee you.
I've been hearing it, Tom.
Yeah, you're already hearing it. Okay,
yep.
Yeah. I'm not surprised. Scott, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
Good to hear from you. It's 29 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 33 and a half minutes past the hour. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Our program brought to you today by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MACS, as in Max, 1-800-511-MAX. Get the latest iPods now at Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MACS. I would like to share with you in just a moment a list of some of the crimes or misdeeds, let's say, of the Bush administration. The list is getting longer every day and is really rather startling when you get through it. That and, you know, the whole issue of what's really going on in New Orleans. Why is it that before Hurricane Charley in Florida, FEMA had pre-positioned supplies? Hurricane Charley hit over a weekend, just like Hurricane Katrina did, and on Monday night, FEMA was mailing out checks to people in Florida. They were providing food, and not just food. I mean, here's the as of noon Monday, FEMA and the federal response agencies had taken the following actions. This is from the FEMA website. About 100 trucks of water and 200 trucks of ice are present or will arrive in the Jacksonville staging area today. 900,000 meals ready to eat are on site in Jacksonville, ready to be distributed. 7,000 cases of food, vegetables, fruits, cheese, ham, and turkeys. Vegetables, fruits, cheese, ham, and turkeys are scheduled to arrive in Winter Haven today. All of this in the home of the brother of the President of the United States. Disaster medical assistance teams, DMATs, are on the ground and setting up comfort stations. FEMA community relations personnel would coordinate with DMATs to assist victims. Urban search and rescue teams are completing reconnaissance missions in coordination with state officials. FEMA is coordinating with the Department of Energy in the state to ensure that necessary fuel supplies can be distributed throughout the state, with a special focus on hospitals and other emergency facilities that are running on generators. The Army Corps of Engineers will soon begin its efforts to provide tarps to tens of thousands of owners of houses, homes and buildings that have been damaged, that have seen damage to their roofs. The Department of Health and Human Services, Veterans Affairs and Defense together have organized 300 medical personnel to be on standby. They begin deployment in Florida tomorrow. This all in the wake of Hurricane Charley, September 6, 2004. Is it, A, racism, B, that Louisiana has a Democratic governor, that New Orleans has a Democratic mayor, that Louisiana has a Democratic senator, B, C, that Bush only gives help to states that happen to be governed by his brother, or D, that FEMA only really does a really good job in the 2 months before a presidential election? I honestly don't know the answer, but it's an interesting question. Tim in Illinois. Hey, Tim, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Up with labor.
Up with labor, yes. Labor Day. Today is Labor Day, and a marvelous day it is. In fact, I'm going over to the Labor Day picnic here in Portland, Oregon, after I get off the air. So, and isn't it odd that Labor Day started out as May Day, and May Day then was, by Ronald Reagan, was merged back into Labor Day here in September, and he declared May Day Law and Order Day. I mean, isn't that ironic or weird or bizarre?
It is.
Yeah.
You know how the Bush tongue sometimes slips and candor comes out?
Occasionally, yeah.
That soundbite you often play about 9/11 and Saddam Hussein is a good example.
Yeah.
I wonder how many people noticed how Bush, in his first trip to New Orleans this week, referred several times to the disaster, quote, in this part of the world, end quote.
Now, what do you think he meant by that?
To me, this showed some candor and true feelings of disengagement from a part of America, as though it were instead part of the third world.
Oh, in other words, instead of saying in this part of the United States or in this part of Louisiana, he said in this part of the world, as if this was somehow disconnected from the rest of us.
This was a disengagement from a part of America. Perhaps for all kinds of reasons.
No,
you've gone over.
Yeah, and it may well be, actually, that he had been prepped to use that phrase so that people would get it in their heads that, you know, we really shouldn't worry that much, and really these people are very different, and they speak Creole and funny French, and, you know, a lot of them are minorities, and, you know, it's just, and they're poor, and it's just, you know, New Orleans is like a different country, really, you know.
Well, I thought of that, too, but I think it's a slip. I also have a question. I'm just puzzled by the actions of Bill Clinton. Why is Bill Clinton sucking up to and defending the Bushes, and why did he go on national TV and lie about this nonsense that nobody knew the levees could break and flood the city What does he stand to gain by this nonsense?
Bill Clinton was raised in poverty, always wanted to be part of the in crowd, wanted to be part of the powerful, the elite, and the Bushes have invited him in. And he is very much now part of the in crowd. He and Poppy Bush are very, very close friends now. And his wife would like to be president of the United States. To be president of the United States, it's a whole lot easier. I mean, you know, it is possible to be not part of the in crowd. Franklin Roosevelt did it. Jimmy Carter did it. But Bill Clinton, when he created the DLC, the Democratic Leadership Council, and these whole DLC Democrats, the Joe Lieberman Democrats, the Republican light Democrats, the in the pockets of the corporation Democrats, that, you know, when Bill Clinton created this thing, he was moving in the direction of Poppy Bush already. And, you know, he's just logically where he would be.
It's just almost too much to take. On top of everything else, we have this hypocrisy from Bill Clinton.
Yeah, it is pretty grim. Tim, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Bill Clinton is looking out for Bill Clinton. And you know, I've said it before. I'll say it again. If Bill Clinton was running for president, I'd probably vote for him, because at least he understands governance. And in a lot of areas, he's got fairly decent policies. And for that matter, if Hillary is the Democratic nominee, in all probability, I'll vote for her. But I'm very disappointed. I'm very disappointed in the Clintons. I have been and continue to be. Xavier in Santa Cruz on the line. Hey, Xavier, what's on your mind?
Oh, hi, Tom. You know, I think communism has a lot of faults, but one of the things that I think Marx said was religion is the opiate of the masses.
Yeah.
And
Leo Strauss echoed it. Yes.
Yeah. Well, what I'm concerned about is in New Orleans, you know, we were talking about conspiracies, and one of the things that I think, if you were an amoral person of the upper 1% of the owning class, you get ahead by not, you know, relying on religious tenets. And that's the exact thing that they will go for, is the thing we least expect them to do. I saw here in Santa Cruz after the earthquake,
mm-hmm.
There was one good example is the Cooper House, this old building that was just really grand and glorious. It wasn't destroyed, but they used the earthquake to tear it down and make more efficient commerce space in downtown Santa Cruz.
Right, and that's what the speculation is now that's going to happen in New Orleans.
I'm really worried about the gentrification of New Orleans.
Yeah.
And that you were talking earlier with that frame guy.
Yeah, frameshopisopen.com, Jeffrey Feldman.
Yeah, I think it's important that we look out which Democrats we get in there, because I'm worried about the DLC Democrats. I'm thinking that the people who they're targeting are the mayor of New Orleans and the governor.
Yeah.
I really think we should get behind them. I think they're being framed.
yeah, literally. Good one, Xavier. Thank you.
Okay,
thank you for the call. And in fact, you know, one of the things that Drudge, for example, Matt Drudge, the right-wing handmaiden of the cons, for the last couple of days has had on his website a picture of the buses underwater in New Orleans and a statement, you know, why weren't the buses mobilized for the mandatory evacuation, Mayor Nagin? You know, why not? Well, the reason is fairly simple, in my opinion. I mean, I haven't asked the mayor this question, but it just, you know, it seems to make sense. Most of the people who got out of town with their families were people who had jobs and therefore were able to afford a car and a tank of gas to get out of town, which would be your bus drivers. Now, you know, I suppose you could say to the bus drivers, sorry, you have to leave your families behind or bundle them up in the car and go down and put them in the, you know, I just don't think it's going to happen. I really don't. And in fact, there's a document floating around here. This is actually from the New Orleans officials, New Orleans Office of Emergency Preparedness. And the local Red Cross executive director was quoted as saying, you're responsible for your safety and you should be responsible for the person next to you. If you have some room to get the person out of town, the Red Cross will have space outside the area. We can help, but we don't have transportation. So, you know, this is, of course, it's all going to come out in the wash. But it's going to come out with a lot of spin. Oh, the mayor should have been able to get all those buses going. Well, you know, maybe, maybe not. I mean, from the time that he was told to declare the mandatory evacuation, I mean, the federal emergency or the National Weather Service now is on record as saying that they had warned Bush about this, or they had warned the Bush administration about this coming. Carolyn in Chicago. Hey, Carolyn, with MakeThemAccountable.org.
.com.
Thank you.
No problem. They should have had an evacuation plan, and they should have had the plan to have the bus drivers ready and the whatever. And certainly, you know, local officials are at fault for that. But the national officials, there's lots of blame to go around. But I wanted to make sure you knew about a situation that could expand and help a lot of people. There's a website that comments on music, classical music, that is matching Louisiana symphony members with symphony orchestras all over the nation, and orchestras are like adopting symphony members and bringing them to the town where their symphony is and giving them jobs for the next 6 to 8 months or, you know, however long it takes. And my thought when I found that out was, why don't other organizations do the same thing?
Yeah.
You know, why can't lawyers' organizations get organized for lawyers and...
Yeah, that's fine for all the white-collar folks, but the vast majority of the poor black folks out of New Orleans actually were employed. And they were the maids in the hotels, and they were the waiters in the restaurants, and they were the busboys and the dishwashers, and they're going to have a heck of a time finding a job in Dallas.
And my idea for those people is that unions can help, and churches. And in fact, the churches are already starting to do this. So everybody who's listening, if your union or your church isn't involved yet, hey, get them involved.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, Carolyn, and thank you for pointing that out. I would though step off from that and say, and that's why we have government. I mean, that's why we have government. You know, we hundreds of thousands of years ago, we used to sit in circles, you know, around a fire, and that was our community, and our government. And we protected ourselves, and we took care of our young, and we took care of the helpless, and we took care of the defenseless, and we took care of those in need. That's what we did. And that's still what we do. And the major cleavage, the major divide between the conservative worldview and the progressive worldview, between the worldview of the founders of this country, who called themselves liberals, came out of the liberal Enlightenment, and the conservatives of today, who trace their roots back to British aristocracy, their philosophical roots. The major cleavage is that the conservatives' view of government is that its power should be largely punitive, that it should be police and military. And the liberal view of government, as expressed by Jefferson and Madison and Washington and Franklin, all the way through the Republican Teddy Roosevelt and the Democrat Franklin Roosevelt, all the way up to Ronald Reagan, the progressive or liberal view, the traditional, Dwight Eisenhower, their view of America, of government, was that government is service. They would talk about a job in government as service, as a way of serving the people. But then Ronald Reagan came along and he said, and I quote, "The best minds are not in government. If they were, business would hire them away," end quote. In other words, if you've got a good mind, the only thing to do with it is make a profit. Government service is not a noble calling. It's something that you do to enrich yourself. Ronald Reagan's, world view. "The 9 most terrifying words in the English language are, 'I'm from the government, I'm here to help.'" This is from Ronald Reagan. Reagan, again, "Politics is not a bad profession. If you succeed, there are many rewards. If you disgrace yourself, you can always write a book." He went on to say, "Politics is supposed to be the second oldest profession. I've come to realize that it bears a very close resemblance to the first." You know, speaking for the Republican point of view, of course. But there are some of us who think that service in government is actually service to the people. And that instead of saying, "Give money, give cash to the Red Cross," we should be playing a role in this. And we shouldn't be passing the bill along to our grandchildren. Tom in Grand Rapids. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Happy Labor Day and power to the people, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
I would just like to say that, first of all, the Democratic governor of Michigan, Jennifer Granholm, has opened up our state with a little northern hospitality to the people of Orleans. And
that is
we got
wonderful.
500 people coming, and she's talking maybe 10,000 being brought up to Michigan.
You have in Jennifer Granholdt one of the finest governors in the United States.
Yes, she's,
I hope you guys realize that.
Oh, hey, we're going to push hard to get her back in here. There's no two ways about that. But I'd also like to say that, you know, with the oil crisis that's going on right now.
Yeah.
Why are these still these guys still going around in circles with these NASCAR shows when they're talking about the price of oil for heating homes going up this winter?
Well, that's a small drop in the bucket, frankly. I am more concerned with why has not George Bush come out and said, okay, tomorrow we're going to lower the speed limit on highways across the United States by 5 miles an hour. That'll save millions of gallons of gasoline. Tomorrow we're going to do that. Very simple stuff. Tomorrow we're going to say that within 1 year the auto manufacturers have to begin increasing their CAFE standards, their corporate average fuel efficiency standards. I mean, why hasn't Bush the reason why is very simple. These guys don't believe in government. They don't believe in government doing things. They don't believe in government changing things or improving things. They don't believe government can make things better. They only believe that corporations can. And we are seeing now the tragedy of that mistaken belief. The absolute tragedy of it. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, Truth in Broadcasting for a Change.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I get up every morning and ignore the global warming, head out to the Oval Office, start my day.
The George Bush song. I'm sorry. I can't handle any more of it. Welcome back, my friends. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Or 55 and a half minutes, 4.5 minutes before the hour. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Alan in Georgia. Hey, Alan, what's on your mind today?
Yes, I was wondering if this flood can be compared to the Johnstown flood in Pennsylvania in the last century.
I don't know enough about that flood to be able to say. There was a huge flood in 1927 in New Orleans, and one of the histories that I read of it was that part of the city that was in danger of being flooded, that they knocked out a wall to flood a poor part of town, that the bankers in town said, let's do this, and promised the poor folks they'd be compensated, and then they weren't after the fact. But the history of the 27 flood was pretty bizarre. I think this is, in terms of death and proportions, this is probably one of the worst disasters to hit the United States. Dave in Eureka, California. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Well, Tom, they turned away offers of help from more than 60 countries that came in immediately, and they said, no, we don't need it.
No, they didn't say no, they just didn't respond.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when Condi Rice was doing her news conference on, what was it, Friday or Thursday, the day after that she was in Ferragamo shopping for shoes and had the woman thrown out who asked her, you know, why are you buying a $2,000 pair of shoes when people are dying in New Orleans? The next day she shows up in Washington, D.C. and holds a press conference and somebody says, why have you not taken France up on their offer of water purification or Russia up on their offer of tents that can house people and things like this? And she said, oh, we haven't turned any of them down. We just haven't responded yet. Now, I'm paraphrasing, but that's
what she said. Because certainly Canada, Mexico, Cuba, they would have been in New Orleans well ahead of FEMA, which was dragging their feet.
Yeah.
They used that as an excuse to add another dollar to the cost of gasoline.
So why do you think FEMA was dragging their feet, Dave?
Well, I'm suspecting, you know, with you, that this is going to be very, very profitable. They have already awarded rebuilding contracts to Halliburton, which is the biggest rip-off company in the history of the...
But see, it would have been profitable even if they showed up and saved people's lives.
And there's also the fact that these are not their favorite people. These are poor people, probably a lot of them receiving one kind of assistance or another. I think they're not beneath mass murder.
Okay, I'm not willing to go that far, but I will give you that I think that... Poor people are low on the priority list of conservatives, and they're pretty upfront about it. I mean, Tucker Carlson was essentially bragging about that on TV last week. He said, you know, this isn't about race, it's about class. He said, if you're rich in America, then you get benefits and you get protections, and if you're not, you don't. As if that's like how it should be. I watched that with my mouth open. Dave, thanks a lot for the call. It's always great to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. The support group of, by, and for We the People.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, John Roberts now is going to be put forward by the Bush administration to replace not Sandra Day O'Connor, but rather to replace William Rehnquist. William Rehnquist, the right-wing attorney who came up with the Goldwater Revolution, was appointed by Nixon. The guy who decided, as the Supreme Court Chief Justice, whose daughter, by the way, got a job in the Bush administration, who's, as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, decided that the Supreme Court would take the case when George Bush sued Al Gore to stop the count of the vote in Florida. And William Rehnquist, Rehnquist and Sandra Day O'Connor, she was the swing vote on that decision. And Rehnquist was the one who decided to put it on the calendar of the Supreme Court. So William Rehnquist and Sandra Day O'Connor, who made George W. Bush president, are now saying to him, okay, you know, shape the court how you want. Back in the 1950s, when Rehnquist had been a law clerk for Robert Jackson, Justice Robert Jackson of the United States Supreme Court, and Brown versus Board of Education was before the court, William Rehnquist wrote a memo about the Plessy versus Ferguson case. This was in 1896, Plessy versus Ferguson, the case that established the separate but equal doctrine, that made America a nation of apartheid, that established segregation. Speaking of Plessy versus Ferguson, William Rehnquist wrote, quote, "That decision was right and should be reaffirmed," end quote. In 1964, in the city of Phoenix, there was an ordinance. He lived in Phoenix at the time. There was an ordinance that would ban discrimination in housing, racial discrimination. Rehnquist stood up and testified against it. At the time, he said, and I quote, "It is, I believe, impossible to justify the sacrifice of even a portion of our historic individual liberty for a purpose such as this," end quote. In other words, when you hear George Bush talk about somebody who believes in the Constitution, somebody who believes in liberty, what they're talking about is they believe in a Constitution that enshrines slavery, and they believe in the liberty to discriminate. Twelve years later, he was the only justice to say, this from David Cobb, he was the only justice to say that Bob Jones University, that hotbed of racial discrimination and religious bigotry, had a legal right to keep African Americans off its campus. Yes, that William Rehnquist. I know it's supposed to be not a good thing to speak ill of the dead. I think I'm just speaking truth here. William Rehnquist, let's tell the truth. He was an active advocate for apartheid in the United States, for racial segregation in the United States. So, John Roberts, in the mold, according to George W. Bush, of William Rehnquist. That, and of course, New Orleans in the news. I mean, there's a lot in the news today. It's Labor Day, by the way, labor in the news. 1-866-889-8894 telephone number if you'd like to insert yourself into the news. Rama in Vermont's on the line. Hey, Rama.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
My old friend Rama, who has filled in on this program from time to time.
Old.
Yeah. You're younger than I am, aren't you?
Okay. I hope so. I was yesterday.
So what's up, Rama?
Hey, well, a couple things. Well, first, real quick on Labor Day, it's a good a time as any to remember two things about Labor Day in New Orleans. One is that it's mostly the laboring class that paid the heaviest of the price for what happened in New Orleans. And the second thing is it's going to be the laboring class that will end up rebuilding New Orleans, whatever comes back there, and something will be rebuilt there, and we should remember that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just want to, you know, the question has come up more than once today as far as why did what happened with the delayed reaction happen? And I can find one other instance where we had, with the Bush administration, a major catastrophe in the wings waiting to happen. They were on vacation in August and basically gave it a little bit of lip service and literally went back to playing golf. And I'm referring, of course, to 2001. And they had all these screaming warnings, you know. What was that? Condi Rice told us about
9/11.
Yeah.
They had 56 specific memos talking about bin Laden, talking about hijacking planes, talking about high visibility targets in New York City and Washington, D.C. And so what does George do? He gets out of town.
Yeah, he went golfing, you know. And so they had all this warning of an impending tragedy coming up, and what'd they do? Nothing. Oh, it'll just work itself out. Well, we saw the same thing happen this last August here with Bush. Only this was even more definite. This was even more egregious because we all knew that New Orleans was going to get hit and hit hard, and everybody knew that those levees, that whole levee system was probably going to get in trouble somewhere along the line. I was hearing it for 2.5 days leading up to the hurricane hitting land.
Well, I got to tell you, Rama, the talking points are now officially out. Karl Rove has taken control of the situation, as the New York Times reports. And here, for example, Representative Charles Bustani, I think is how it's pronounced, Jr., the Republican congressman from Louisiana.
Sure, yeah.
Charles W. Bustani. From the Washington Post a couple of days ago, and I quote, he says, quoting the Washington Post, Representative Charles Bustani, Jr. said he spent the last 48 hours urging the Bush administration to send help. Quoting the congressman now, I started making calls and trying to impress upon the White House and others that something needed to be done. He said the state resources were being overwhelmed and we needed direct federal assistance, command and control, and security, all three of which were lacking, end quote. Okay, that's what he was saying. He had been for 2 days begging the Bush administration to do something. They were doing nothing. On MSNBC this morning, he used the word ineffectual to describe the state responses. Quote, the completely ineffectual state response. He repeated the word ineffectual several times. That's the word that the Republicans are trying to put out and trying to bind to the state. He says all of the red tape has been at the state level. He says the federal response has been hindered by the state. This is what this Republican congressman from Louisiana said this morning on MSNBC, radically changing his tune. Karl Rove called him up, I'll bet you.
Oh, yeah, no, there's no doubt. And look, everybody's going to want to play the word game here. At least the Bush administration will. Because
that's all they do. That's all they got.
Well,
words.
There's no competence there. But, you know, to get back to what I wanted to say there was that it can be, you can view this as either benign incompetence or you can view it as criminal neglect. But understand this, whichever way you view it, this is not the first time they've done this exact same routine. And the next time some major disaster is in the offing, we can expect no less because they've shown, as you've just read, they've shown no indication to change. They just want to talk.
Yeah, they just, well said.
Absolutely.
Rama, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom.
Always good to hear from you. Yeah, this is just the absolute bottom line. They, you know, it's all about what it looks like. It's not about what it is or what's going on. By the way, you want to say hi to Rama. You can drop into our live chat room. I see that, Rama, you're there. Go to TomHartmann.com and click live chat, and you can just drop in and say hi. Imagine a petition listing Bush's worst misdeeds. An email I received yesterday. His ruinous tax cuts for the wealthy, forcing us to rely on China and other countries to prop up our economy. His economic policies, such as CAFTA, with shameful Democratic support, fostering outsourcing of decent jobs, resulting in the slow destruction of the middle class, to go along with our shameful historic neglect of the poor. George W. Bush's destruction of environmental laws and their enforcement. George W. Bush's unilateral withdrawal from the Kyoto Treaty and ignoring global warming for 4 years. George W. Bush's fossil fuel corporate giveaway disguised as an energy policy, which does nothing to help the national security of the U.S., by weaning us off reliance on Middle Eastern oil. George W. Bush's ignorance of pre-9/11 terrorist warnings. His aborted pursuit of bin Laden. And now he doesn't, just, you know, doesn't think about him all that often. It's just not all that important. In fact, here he is.
So I don't know where he is. Nor, you know, I just don't spend that much time on him, really, to be honest with
you. Yeah, to be honest with you. You see, every now and then he's got to say to be honest with you so that you'll know that he's actually saying the truth as opposed to the rest of the time when he's not. His lies about Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction and supposed threat to our security. George W. Bush's illegal, unjustified war of aggression on and occupation of Iraq. George W. Bush's immoral use of illegal and indiscriminate weapons of mass destruction such as cluster bombs, depleted uranium, and firebombs, including napalm, on Iraqi and Afghan civilians. George W. Bush's denial of the fundamental rights of legal representation in the Constitution and fair trials to suspects. George W. Bush's immoral, illegal use of torture in Guantanamo, Afghanistan, and Iraq on untried suspects. George W. Bush's use of extraordinary rendition of untried suspects, people who have not even been charged with crimes, using private planes to ship them to countries known to torture people. George W. Bush's failure to rebuild Afghanistan and Iraq to relieve the dire misery that his bombs created in those two countries. George W. Bush is causing the death of over 100,000 Iraqi civilians. George W. Bush's blatant violation of the Nuremberg trials, the Geneva Conventions, the Hague Conventions, the UN Charter, and the U.S. Constitution. Especially Article 6, Section 2, the Supremacy Clause. George W. Bush is causing the death of over 1,800 U.S. soldiers in Iraq. And his refusal to let us see the coffins of those soldiers who were the sacrifice that George W. Bush put out for us. You know, when Franklin Roosevelt talked about sacrifice, he was talking about people using less gas and paying higher taxes. When George W. Bush talks about sacrifice, he's talking about sending the kids of poor Americans to die in Iraq. George W. Bush's protection of senior aides who revealed the identity of a CIA agent in retaliation for Joe Wilson speaking the truth about Bush's lies. George W. Bush's gross negligence in minimizing the destruction to New Orleans in the event of a level 4 hurricane by cutting floods every year for levees and water pump upgrades in spite of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers saying, oh, we got to have this. I'm telling you, you are going to hear such a steady drumbeat in the media of, oh, this was the mayor's fault, this was the governor's fault. You are going to hear it. You're going to hear it loud. Fox News is going to be pounding on it. All the right-wing talk shows, I guarantee you, it's going to be really interesting to see if within the next 5 days, because that's going to be their goal, the Bush administration can completely flip this around like they did with John Kerry. He was a war hero one day, he was a war deserter or something the next. They're going to try and do the same thing with the governor of Louisiana. 20 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We had Walmart delivered.
Right-wing freak judges, $200 billion grudges. Yes, war's cooked up right from day one. Big corporations are running this nation like it never was meant to be run.
You tell them, Jim Turr.
Yes, George, I hope you're having fun.
And welcome back, my friends. Now, I would like somebody to explain to me, if possible, what the meaning of these events are in New Orleans. I've looked at some of the conservative, the ultra-conservative message boards. In fact, it's interesting, some of the folks in our chat room have posted a few of them. Thank you very much to the folks in the chat room. Liberty Forum, for example, where you've got these, you know, very conservative folks Actually, they're not even conservatives. They're not with a modern meaning of the word. They're not cons. In any case, they're saying, hey, wait a minute, is this the beginning of the great government takeover that the John Birchers have been living, anticipating any minute now? What is the meaning of this? This is Aaron Broussard, the president of Jefferson Parish, essentially the county commissioner for Jefferson Parish, on Meet the Press yesterday talking to Tim Russert.
We had Walmart deliver 3 trucks of water, trailer trucks of water. FEMA turned them back. They said we didn't need them.
Turned them back? FEMA turned back the water that was being donated by Walmart?
This was a week ago.
A week ago. And this is a recording from Sunday, from yesterday. So this would, you know, and it continues.
FEMA, we had 1,000 gallons of diesel fuel on a Coast Guard vessel docked in my parish. The Coast Guard said, come get the fuel right away. When we got there with our trucks, they got a word. FEMA says, don't give you the fuel.
FEMA says, don't give you the fuel. Say, what? What's going on in New Orleans? And now it's been militarized. The troops are going in. The perimeters are being cut off. It's going to be... we all need to watch this very carefully and see if the news reporters are going to be evicted from the inside New Orleans or moved over to areas that aren't quite so badly affected. Move them all over to the French Quarter. Get them out of the way. Anyhow, Aaron Broussard, the president of Jefferson Parish, continues.
Today, FEMA comes in and cuts all of our emergency communication lines. They cut them without notice. Our sheriff, Harry Lee, goes back in. He reconnects the line. He posts armed guards on our line and says no one's getting near these lines. Sheriff Harry Lee said that if American government would have responded like Walmart has responded, we wouldn't be in this crisis. But I want to
Walmart. Now, you get that? And of course, you know, Tim Russert had to say, well, you know, isn't this the governor's fault?
Thank government.
Isn't it the governor's fault?
Sir, they were told, like me, every single day, the cavalry's coming. On a federal level, the cavalry's coming. The cavalry's coming. The cavalry's coming. I have just begun to hear the hoofs of the cavalry. The cavalry's still not here yet, but I've begun to hear the hoofs, and we're almost a week out. Let me give you just 3.
And then he gets into the examples that I just played for you. So he was having nothing of it. Of Tim Russert, you know, doing the Republican talking points, as it were. I believe this is
New Orleans Bears.
Yeah, here we go.
Mr. Broussard, hold on, sir. Of New Orleans and the governor of New Orleans bear some responsibility. Couldn't they have been much more forceful, much more effective, and much more organized in evacuating the area?
Yeah. So now the word of the day. From the Franklin's Department of Orwellian News speak is ineffectual. This is the word that they want to attach to the governor of New Orleans, the governor of Louisiana and the mayor of New Orleans. Forget about Bush. We shouldn't be talking about George W. Bush. We shouldn't be talking about FEMA. Just, you know, absolutely not. Don't want to be doing that. Don't even look at him. No, it's not about FEMA. It's not about Bush. It's about the governor and it's about the mayor, who were swamped. I mean, literally. But don't look at that man behind the curtain.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
We don't need no thought control. No dark sarcasm in the classroom.
Or in the national press.
Teacher
leaves
kids alone.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back, my friends. I'm coming up on 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. Our number 1-866-889-8894. Armand in Sarasota, Florida on the line. Hey, Armand, what's on your mind today?
First, I have a joke for everybody.
Okay.
Why does Bill Clinton keep licking the Republican hand that slaps him down so often?
And the answer?
To keep from getting dry skin.
Oh, okay. All right. That was not expected. Okay. And your comment, or your you know, what?
Well, I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
We all know pretty much how much property and land holdings the Bushes and the Clintons and the Kennedys all hold together collectively, you know, homes, big homes, estates and such.
The Clintons are not all that wealthy, frankly. In fact, before Bill Clinton became president, he was not at all wealthy.
I understand that, but they managed quite well to sell out after his term was over, though.
Well, it's hard to say. I, as far as I can tell, Bill Clinton's making his money on speaking fees and books, and that's a whole lot different than George Herbert Walker Bush going out and becoming the head of the largest investment company in the world for defense contractors, you know, the Carlyle Group.
Well, I understand the.
And then his son declares a war, and suddenly the Carlyle Group is making money hand over fist.
Well, you know, it's not over with Clinton yet either, is it?
No, it's not. And you know, we'll see how it plays out. But in any case, your point. We know the land holdings of the wealthy
family. Here's my point. You know, come on, Tom. You know the conservatives and the wealthy conservatives and wealthy liberals. There's not a damn dime's worth of difference. Have you heard Hillary Clinton or Kennedy or the Bushes or any of them step up to the platform or the media and say, you know, we have all this extra room in all our homes and holdings and everything. We're going to take all these people here. We'll take 500 of those people that are displaced
and put
them in our place.
No, I haven't, Armin, heard that from them. And, you know, point made, point taken. What I have heard is Teddy Kennedy coming out and saying, we need to define a date to get out of Iraq right now, which is an appropriate thing for him to be doing and saying. And you know, I'm very disappointed, frankly, that Bill Clinton's going on national television defending George W. Bush's handling of this disaster, particularly given the very, very clear record that is out there of how Bush handled the last hurricane. Well, not the last, but a last hurricane, Charlie, in Florida, August 17, 2004, St. Petersburg Times. Governor Jeb Bush sought federal help Friday while Hurricane Charlie was still in the Gulf of Mexico. President Bush approved the aid about an hour after the hurricane made landfall. By Monday afternoon, the cavalry seemed to be in place. Cargo planes were shuttling FEMA supplies from a Georgia Air Force base to a staging area in Lakeland, and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers had shipped 11 truckloads of water and 14 truckloads of ice. The first assistance checks to victims were to be shipped Monday night. So, anyhow, Mike Rose is with us. Mike is the author of a book, The Mind at Work, Valuing the Intelligence of the American Worker. His website, MikeRoseBooks.com. And Mike, in your book, you make the point that we don't really appropriately value the labor that goes into things ranging from dishwashing to hairdressing, I mean, to being a waitress. I mean, tell us about this.
Right, right. And, you know, Tom, this dismissal of physical work goes way back in the culture. I mean, if you look at editorial pages from the 1790s and the early 1800s, you'll see these pieces written saying, for example, that mechanics are illiterate as a group and they're not capable of engaging in governance.
Well, here's Sir Edmund Burke, the father of modern conservative thought in the 1770s, said, "It does me no harm if a man is allowed to engage in such a servile profession as being a hairdresser or a tallow maker, candle maker, but it does society considerable violence if such a man is allowed to participate in governance," in other words, allowed to vote.
Well, there you go. So, of course, the roots of these things go far back. In fact, they go all the way back, if you look, into classical Greece in the way that Plato and Aristotle and those folks thought about work of the hand versus work of the mind. And unfortunately, I mean, here we live in a democracy and we hold certain values very dear to us about the equality of the common man, and yet we still make these distinctions between folks depending on the kind of work they do.
But I have to say, Mike Rose, that I remember growing up, I grew up in Lansing, Michigan in the 50s and 60s, and you know, as a kid, and my father ran a tool and die shop, and it wasn't his. I mean, you know, he worked in a tool and die shop. He was right. And the guys who were members of the Die Sinkers Union, I think it was called, you respected them. Now, maybe it's just because I grew up in a blue collar family, but I mean, there was this pervasive sense that the people who had made it into the union as a journeyman after several years of you know, trying to get to that level, that they really were as good as what they did as a doctor was at what he or she did, and that they were highly respected for that, and they were frankly well paid for that. You could raise a family, put your kids through college, have all their medical expenses covered, have a pension for your retirement simply by being a die sinker, and you know, or a tool and die manufacturer. And it wasn't just that. I mean, this was pretty much right across the board. All of labor. I mean, even if you just worked at Oldsmobile on the assembly line, once you got in, once you were a member of the union, once you'd been trained, there was a sense of dignity in that work. And don't you think that part of Ronald Reagan's war on organized labor that was declared in the summer of 1981 when he fired, 15,000 air traffic controllers or 5,000, I forget the number, and just has continued right up to this day with an aggressive and actively hostile labor department, that part of this war on labor has been the denigration of labor?
Well, I think that's a really good point. You know, I came up in the same kind of family you did, and I know exactly what you're talking about. You know, within certain groups of us in this country, there is a deep respect for this kind of work. But you're raising the really important question about social class that folks seem to be afraid to talk about these days. And you're right. I mean, we live in a time where there's been much more of a concerted effort, I think, to just treat folks who do this kind of work and live in this part of the social order in a way very different from other times that they've been treated in our country's history.
We have, in my lifetime, we've gone into and out of, or at least come out of, I suppose it really started during Franklin Roosevelt's presidency with the Wagner Act and elevating labor, you know, to a high role, to honor labor, in the 30s and the 40s, and before I was born. But certainly in the 50s and 60s and 70s, you know, right up basically to the Reagan presidency in the United States, we honored work and we honored labor, and it was, I think, a fairly, you know, considered a high thing. But there's an entire generation of people growing up right now, post-Reagan, who have grown up with this meme that if you don't go to college, you're not going to make a good living, and that's the way it should be.
Well, you know, and I think that all of this is especially amped up in our high-tech era. If you think about it, Tom, particularly the work of old industry and the work of traditional service folks and all of that gets classified. You know, if you read the op-ed pages and whatnot, you hear language like, well, all this new work, the work of the new economy, so-called, that's neck-up work. That's a phrase that I hear all the time. And all that other work, that's neck-down, implying that there's no mind involved in it at all, right?
Right.
That it's simply brute force, that, yes, it took courage and, yes, it took forbearance, and it took certain kinds of both physical and moral strength to do it, but it's really not on a par with all the kind of work that really is in the future. And while I certainly see the truth in these kinds of distinctions between new work and old work and all of that, it carries with it some really troubling implications that all these millions and millions of people who build houses and weld parts together and make a restaurant run, that somehow or another, they're just not equal to the folks that do the new work, the classier work, the snazzy work.
And why?
Well, I think it goes back to this long-standing bias that we have in the country about folks who do work of the hand. Now, the point you made earlier is an important one to remember, and that is it manifests itself in different ways and in different intensity over our history, but it is part of our history, and I think it's particularly evident now, both for the reasons you said, which is the kind of, you know, class warfare that's going on,
yeah,
but also because I think it coincides with this celebration of work of electronic media and symbolic analysis and all of that, and it makes us forget just how we're surrounded by intelligence. Every time that plumber shows up and figures out what's wrong, and every time somebody goes to a hairstylist and says something vague like, oh, give me something light and summery, and this person is able to turn that poetic request into something that pleases somebody. All of this is evidence of the kind of brain power that just surrounds us in the work of the world, and I don't think we see it.
Might this be part of the conservative aristocracy, the tradition, the conservative mind, conservative thought, the mindset, the worldview of conservatives, by and large, is one of elitism. It's one of aristocracy, of plutocracy, of kleptocracy, as it were. And in saying or suggesting to Americans that the only way to make a living that's above the worst of the lowest level of survival is to have a college education, which is very much the way it is today. I mean, when you and I were growing up, if you had a high school diploma and you got a good union job, you could raise a family. Now, only 8% of Americans, you know, 8% of our workforce falls into that category. And back then it was 25% when Ronald Reagan came into power in 1980. And so could it be that really the agenda here in promulgating or in propagating this meme of education, educated work that requires education is the only work that is worthy of pay adequate to actually raise a family, that's really a way of establishing the new aristocracy and maintaining it?
Well, you know, it becomes a part of it, doesn't it? I wouldn't want to lay all of that on this one single meme, as you call it. Because, you know, look, there are, Tom, we know, there are real differences between folks who get a college degree and folks who don't. I mean, there's differences in the amount of money they can make in a lifetime, in the kind of benefits they're going to have, in the danger of the work they do. I don't want to be naive or romantic about the differences between the work that all my folks did and the kind of work that I'm able to do because of my education. That's absolutely real and true. But what I think is right about what you're saying is that, in a way, this talk about intelligence becomes yet another way of playing out social class. It's a more accepted way. It's not as vulgar as just talking about aristocrats versus plebeians and poor folks and peasants. But it is another way, I think, that we kind of play out these class biases that are in our culture.
Right. But the thing, Mike Rose, MikeRoseBooks.com, Mike Rose is the author of The Mind at Work. The thing is that rigidifies this is that in the 1960s, for example, before Reagan became governor of California, you could get a college education for free if you were simply a resident of the state of California. You know, in the 1790s, in the state of Virginia, you could get an education for free in Virginia if you were, you know, because Thomas Jefferson created the University of Virginia specifically to give free educations to everybody. And that provided for enormous social mobility. The ability of people to move in and out of, move from blue collar to white collar, and you know, as they wanted, or as they were able. But now that the cons have, for 25 years, basically run this country, they have run up the cost of education to the point where the only way that somebody can get that college education, which is the necessary key to the door into, you know, more than simply a survival level income, the only way that they can get that education is to be born into a family that can afford to pay for it.
Well, it's a terrific point. I mean, what has happened to the cost of education, as well as to the competition, and to the way that folks who do have the means, and I don't blame them for doing this, but folks that do have the means are able to provide all kinds of additional supports for their children, from, you know, expensive private schools to tutoring programs to college entrance training, all of this kind of thing. So when you add all of that onto the kind of increase in cost you're talking about, it becomes very difficult for kids like I was to be able to gain access to most universities.
Yeah, same here. And there were all those options available to us in the Bush administration, and cons all the way from Reagan have just been absolutely committed and devoted to slashing Pell Grants, to slashing student aid, to turning student aid over to predatory corporations rather than making it a function of government, to tightening the screws in every way they can, to erecting barriers. And now we find, you know, there have been several reports in the last year indicating that America, the United States of America, is now, when compared with the other, 22, I believe, industrialized nations of the world, the top industrialized nations of the world, we are the most rigid when it comes to social class. People are less able to move between in economic class structure. They're less able to move from one class to another than in any other nation in the world.
Well, you know, of all places, in The Economist, which is hardly a left-wing radical rag, The Economist, certainly a very centrist kind of publication said that very thing a couple months ago.
Yeah, it's a very conservative publication, actually.
That's right. They said the United States is veering very much toward moving into a rigid class-based society.
And so, that's really what the cons want. And then their right-wing talk show hosts go on and say, these liberals, they just want to talk about class warfare.
I know. It's amazing, isn't it? If you even make a whimper about the issue of social class, you're accused of waging class warfare.
Yeah, that's amazing. Mike Rose, great book, The Mind at Work, Valuing the Intelligence of the American Worker, raises provocative issues, particularly on this Labor Day. Mike, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom. It's my pleasure.
And the website for your information is MikeRoseBooks.com?
That's right.
That's right. Okay, great. Mike Rose, thanks so much for being with us. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. Talk radio for the rest of us.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Tell him, Louis.
I see trees of green.
Louis Armstrong from New Orleans.
Red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. I predict, my political prediction for the week, I predict that before this week is out, George Bush, in a desperate attempt to recapture the news cycle and get our attention away from his disaster in New Orleans, will appoint probably either Alberto Gonzalez or Janice Rogers Brown to fill the seat occupied by Sandra Day O'Connor. We'll see. Kate in San Diego. Hey, Kate, what's on your mind today?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I'm calling because I have this nagging question in my mind, and that is, do you believe that this administration or the federal government would compensate those people who are displaced that had home ownership? Will they be compensated for the land that they want, that you owned?
Probably, yeah. Yeah. Probably our tax dollars will be used to pay them off, so that they can go away someplace, so that that land can then be bought very cheap by developers who are good friends of Bush, like the developers who've been developing the wetlands along, you know, this south of New Orleans, which have created the have done away with the storm surge block, and you know, they'll start building, as they said this morning on NPR, a Disneyland version of New Orleans rather than the old original New Orleans. That's my take on it, Kate. Kate, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Gary in Pittsburgh. Hey, Gary, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. Just happened to hear you, and thanks for taking my call. It just seemed to me you brought up a couple of good points here about the president vis-a-vis the role the government vis-a-vis the storm, you know, the awful tragedy down there in New Orleans. And I remember John Edwards saying during the campaign, correct me if I'm mistaken, there was one country, there's one America for the Republicans, George Bush, the leader of them, and the one for the rest of us.
Yeah.
That came to mind. And you said something.
Yeah, his Two Americas speech.
Two Americas, yes.
Yeah, and that was very much a part of his campaign. And Gary, you're absolutely right. It's.
And this is a tragedy. You know, he promised to come in and unite us, not divide us. That is the central theme. No, that is the central theme. I don't want to throw that up, but that is the central theme.
I know.
Of his, that is at the core of who he was supposed to be.
I know,
and
but
Mr.
it's
President,
not who he is.
I'm sorry, you've come up wanting.
Yeah, I agree. Gary, thanks a lot for the call. Well said. And that'll be our final note for the day. Thank you for being with us. We'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place. It's the Tom Hartman Program. Thanks for being with us. Happy Labor Day. Get out there and participate in one of the Labor Day activities out there. I'm going to the Labor Day picnic the AFL-CIO is putting on here in Portland, Oregon.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.